It's leadership at all levels, now in its eighth year, with Gail Launia-Lofsen, our host. She's the Director of Corporate Partnerships and Community Relations for the Newport International Boat Show, a division of Newport Restaurant Group, where her career is focused on building decades of corporate partnerships through leadership, gratitude, and positivity. As an adjunct professor at the University of Rhode Island, at Salve Regina University, and at Western Connecticut State University, Gail appreciates the opportunity to share business acumen and optimistic views on life. She's the author of Your Someday Is Now, What Are You Waiting For? 100% of the book sales benefit nonprofit organizations, and to date, over $50,000 has been donated to nonprofit organizations. And hello again, Gail.
Well, good morning, Bruce. It's the month flies and we're back together again, that's for sure.
For sure.
You are going to love today's, you will absolutely love today's guest. And I want to say her name correctly. I wanted to, because it's Tresa Savadago.
Hi, everybody.
I had the pleasure of meeting Tresa probably about 6 months ago when she joined NSA New England all the way from Mexico, and she joined it because of our mutual friend, Mari Ryan, the former president of NSA New England, and that's it's not National Security Association, it's National Speakers Association. Then we joined a professional development series together with six dynamic women, and then this group turned into a Thrive Mastermind before a conference we were both at last week for NSA. Tresa is one of the very few guests who, when she was sending over her leadership points, sent me these words. Gail, when I think of leadership, I ask, how do I lead myself? It's so easy to look outward, but how am I showing up? What's my personal scorecard? Am I in alignment with my values? Did I put forth my highest and best effort? If we all went out into the world and showed up like this, what a world we would have. Tresa, you are a go-getter, a make-it-happen person. Welcome to Leadership at All Levels, and please tell us about your leadership journey.
Oh, hi, everybody. I'm so excited to be here. Gail, thank you so much. I have been a leader since I was a little kid. I was a horse nut and started a horse camp with no horses.
We're going to get back to that. We're going to go back to that one. Okay.
And I was a champion Girl Scout cookie seller when I was a kid. And mostly that was just because I liked going door to door and talking to people. And just, you know, I can look back now and see all of these, this breadcrumb trail that leads to today. And so, yeah, it's very exciting.
Tresa, it was pointed out to you at one of your jobs, though. You didn't say, I'm a leader, when you were 7 years old going door to door. It was pointed out at one of your jobs within the past decade. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah. So it was interesting. I was doing some work with Capital One, and I had organized this topic around money and values. And we were doing a pilot program. This was right before COVID. And I had, you know, brought in all the people that were going to attend this series. And, you know, we negotiated the space, and it was a really great project that we worked on. And the woman that was instructing the series, she said, oh, you're a really great leader. And I looked at her and I was like, what are you talking about? And her face just lit up and she's like, Tresa, you don't know you're a leader. And I just always thought I was doing just a, you know, a collection of things and moving the needle on stuff, but I never really thought of myself as a leader. I didn't own that identity. And in hindsight, what I started to reflect on was, yes, she was right. And two, by me not knowing I was a leader, that felt really irresponsible of me. If I'm a leader, how do I be the very best leader that I can be? And so that sent me on a journey to starting to think about becoming more a better leader.
Tracy, do you think sometimes people are, they think they're bragging or arrogant if they're like, I'm a leader, and they don't want to say these words out loud?
I think it's a very common trait for women to be in a leadership role and not own it, or not, you know, oh, it's just this thing that I do. I don't think that my own experience was very uncommon, especially for women. I think for men, it's really important that they are recognized as a leader, even, you know, when they're not. So I think that that's something that is fun to unpack.
Now, interesting. You talk about your personal scorecard. Is this something, is it a journal? Is it a whiteboard? Is it in your head? How do you keep your personal scorecard?
Yeah, so I think about my own personal scorecard by several different categories, like how am I managing my finances? How am I managing my personal relationships? How am I managing opportunities? How am I showing up as a leader? And so I have a scorecard, and it's written on my office wall. And then I look at that on a regular basis and review it. And then also I will reach out to colleagues and say, hey, listen, this is, I give myself a personal score of this. What's your experience of me? You know, kind of like my own 360 review. And am I showing up in a way that adds value to you, value to the conversation? And also, am I in alignment with my own personal values?
Well, I'm going to give you an A+ after meeting you last week in San Antonio. I don't know if that's helpful or not. You're vibrant, you're fun, you like connecting people, you're so unselfish. That's how I'm good. So are you hard on yourself with this scorecard?
I just like to keep it top of mind, right? I don't want to lose track of what's important to me. And I think that we can get caught up in the day-to-day minutiae of stuff and then forget about, so I'm thinking long-term, right? And thinking about how I can serve my future self in a better, more intentional, direct way.
Well, we are here today with Tracy Zavadigo. And Tracy is a change agent, a connector, an internationally recognized relationship strategist, a keynote speaker, and we're going to also get at some point to your TEDx speech, which I've watched 3 times and had my students watch as well. Unbelievable. So we'll be back.
It's Leadership at All Levels with Gail Lowney Olofsson.
And we are talking this morning with Tracy Zavadigo, all the way from Mexico. She's a member of NSA New England. She's a thought leader, a connector, or just a remarkable person. We're talking a little bit about how do we lead ourselves in everyday life? What's our personal scorecard? Are we just running through life and not even thinking about this? Do we want to be an A-plus player? Do we want to be marginal? I mean, that's up to you in life, but I mean, why not live it? And during COVID, I took care of my aunt. My aunt had gone from, you know, right before she passed away, she had no one else. She didn't have any children. So my Aunt Terry, our naughty Aunt Terry, so much fun. She had gone from the ticket agent at American Airlines to the vice president of marketing. And yes, you can be mad at her because she had 2 nervous breakdowns when she introduced, drumroll, overbooking. So she's the reason we have, she's one of the reasons we have flights that overbook. But we talked a lot at her end of life. She knew it was her final weeks, her final days. And Tracy, you sit at your end of life. And again, it does flashback like a movie reel and the stories she tell. And it all came back to what was most important to her were the friendships and love in her life. The fact that she was VP of American Airlines meant nothing. She retired, I think, at like 55 or 56. You worked as a mentor, Tracy, in the end of life space and mentioned it's a real wake up call for you. Please expand on that.
Yeah, so I have this friend, his name is Michael Hebb, and he talks about the end of life space, and he's got a book called Death Over Dinner. And I happened to pick up an opportunity to work with him about a year ago. And it was just fascinating to work in that end of life space and start thinking about what is a good life? What is a good death? And what are the elements that need, like at the end of the life, at the end of your life, when you're doing that movie playback reel, what are the highlights? What was amazing? What is going to be something that you reflect on, that you are super grateful that you were on this world? And I also think a lot about how can I, like, I'm the writer of that end of life, that life script, right? Mm-hmm. And I think at one point I was giving a lot of control to other people influencing what that movie looked like. And I would, you know, we have from the school system, we take a lot of direction from other people to guide our lives, right? And at some point I realized, whoa, wait a minute, I'm in charge. Like, if this movie is not going in the direction that I want it to, what am I going to do to plot shift and change the course of how things are going? And if I'm in charge of what that movie looks like, what do I want it to say? What do I want? What are the elements of a really, really great movie for me? My movie. What's my movie going to be something I'm super proud of and want to watch over and over again and be like, high five, that was an awesome ride.
And, you know, starting your movie really starts also with the way you're talking to yourself. And I tell the students that, you know, we talked about that this week at two of the different universities. You become the story that you tell. You become the story that you tell about yourself. So why are you going to disparage yourself? Why do we pick on ourselves? Oh, I'm not good enough. I don't have this. I like her stuff better. I like, you know, he has a better this. Whatever it is, why is that negativity bias where there's all this good here that we have, but we look at the negative? And you had your journey. You had your journey that you were playing back the movie in your own life. And we all do. You didn't like the direction it was going. So how do people even start to make changes to get better?
Yeah, well, one, to address that, I think that we think that negativity is actually motivating, and contemporary science has proved that it's not. And so we're using an old model to, you know, that industrial era model of a negativity and fear to drive things. And it actually doesn't work. And yet we're in the habit of that. And so I think one of the things about changing your own movie is to have the courage to even look at what's not working and to be willing to make the necessary changes in order to get out of the habit loop. To have the courage to face. So I always say you can't fix what you're not willing to face. And I think a lot of people don't want to face it, or they want to project blame on other people. But like, I'm in charge of this experience. This experience is 100% an inside job. And then what happens is how, and you know, going back to Pam Garamond, our friend with positive psychology, what happens is how you view a situation, that's an inside job too. Do you see it as something that awesome happened, or do you see something, are you looking for the negative? So the lens in positive psychology is, honestly, what are you looking for? Are you looking for tragedies? Are you looking for high fives? Are you looking for the awesome people that helped you out? Are you, you know, what are you actually looking for? And also being courageous enough to say, hey, you know what? This isn't going in the direction that I want it to. How do I shift my relationships? How do I shift my own thinking? How do I shift my decision-making? That's a huge one. You know, how do I start thinking in a more positive way that is loaded with agency? Like, I'm in charge. I'm in charge of this ride. This ride is 100% my responsibility. And if you take accountability for it, that, you know, that can be really intimidating, right? Because we've spent a lot of time giving other people control, except that at the end of the day, I'm the one in charge. And that can be really, really scary. Like, whether the decisions work out or whether decisions don't work out, that's on me. It's totally on me.
Tracy, you're scaring me that I'm in charge of my life. I need a little help. You know, We do need help. And that's where advisors come in. Professional advisors, mentors. I talk a lot about this too. You do as well. It's like when we have mentors in our life that can help us really make the most out of it. Everyone wastes time. You can look back on your life and think, boy, I should have studied harder. I should have done this. The should have, would have, could have, but you didn't. And it brought you to this point you are today. So if it's a good point, that's great. If it's a point that needs an apex, that you really need to improve on it, then you work on that. You have to start. But like you're saying, you do have to start. How about people, though, who just don't have, there's a lot, I'm seeing it with students and people of all ages, the anxiety, the depression, the lack of get up and go. What are your suggestions for that? I know Pam had talked about write down 5 things great about your day at night, 5 things you're grateful for in the morning. But how do you, when you're really, really down, or what have you seen in people when they just feel really put down, how can they rise up again and get things done?
I think there's curiosity is a really big something that I invest in a lot. And so getting curious and also realizing before you make a change, there's a grieving process and a recognition of things not working. And so that grief is actually a good thing. There's this, it's a recognition to you. It's kind of like, I look at it like a rock in your shoe, right? Like, oh, something doesn't feel good. Something's not right. It's a clue to you that there's a shift that needs to happen. And so that can be a clue that I'm not in alignment with my values. This is not going in the direction that I want it to. You know, at first we get that rock in our shoe kind of moment. And then it's really beautiful when we can get curious and be like, what's not sitting well with me on this? How can I make a shift that leads to another outcome?
Making that shift. And it is true, like the grieving process we have to go through, that, you know, what is the expression? When our son left for college and I was doing what the Irish call keening, and that is just, I couldn't stop crying. This is one of the happiest times of his life and I'm crying, but he needs his mama. No, he doesn't. And one of the things a woman texted me who had her third child going to college was, Gail, I promise you, this is a great new chapter, but the hardest part of the chapter is turning the page. The hardest part of the chapter is turning the page. And I immediately stopped crying. I sent that to so many other mothers and let the butterfly go. Let him go. Let him make mistakes. Pick him back. Help him pick himself up again. But it was just it is true, like our hardest part of the chapter. So the hardest part for me is going to break, because we want to keep talking to you. We're going to come back from break, leadership at all levels, and enjoy our conversation this morning with Teresa Savadago.
Time always goes by so quickly, but we are back. It's Leadership at All Levels with Gail Lowney-Olofsson.
And our guest, Teresa Savadago. We are talking this morning next about leadership journeys, starting at the end of your life and looking backwards. What's the play reel that you'd like to see? And next, we're going to jump into networking and why you should talk regularly with strangers. Before we talk about your TEDx, Teresa, I can relate to this so much because, like you, I love people. I love all people. I can't get enough of people. I am never peopled out. Are you ever peopled out?
Oh, for sure. I'm what they call an ambivert, which I'm an extrovert and an introvert. I need my recovery time and time for reflection. So there are people, like, for instance, when I have a friend of mine that when she, wants to feel better, she goes to a bar or meets a bunch of people. And for me, feeling better is some time alone and journaling and processing what's going on. So it's about how we fill our energy and where we get our energy. I love talking with people, but I also need recovery time.
But like, don't you think we all need recovery time? Do you think?
Sure. Yeah. Some people, like, their recovery time though is being in people. So my friend will basically throw herself go to a concert or something like that. That's her idea of getting in. That's recovery for her. And so I think, you know, just being aware of where your energy comes from, I think is really important.
My energy definitely just comes from, first of all, gratitude and loving life. And then starting the day, just real quiet, in my own spirituality, and then getting to that gym, because if I don't go, I won't go. That'll energize me for the day. But about strangers, when I was probably 7 and my brother was 6, we just talked to everyone. This is an interesting one. We'd go into the supermarket, and I remember meeting John and Cow. And my mom would leave us alone because back then you could. His name was Carl, but we called him Cow. So John and Cow. And we'd hang out with them because I walked up and said, I'm Gail, will you be my friend? I don't know if you've ever done that. Have you done that?
Oh, yeah. I definitely have done that. And I think this idea of stranger danger, you know, we're taught stranger danger, but, you know, the reality is when you look back on your life, like everybody was a stranger. Your spouse was a stranger at one point. Your best friend was a stranger at one point. I'd really like to like punch a hole in that myth that there's like, it's stranger danger. And, you know, one of the things when I do meet with strangers, I think what shifted for me over time is like before I just used to like random, I love meeting people, I love meeting everybody. But now one of the things that I like to do is have a question in my mind, you know. So one of the things that I'll ask people is like, hey, you know, I'm like after we meet for a moment, you know, I'm just curious, like, how do you want to be remembered? Or, you know, so it gets to something more value driven as opposed to talking about inane things that really don't matter, you know, like what kind of teas do you like? Right. And so I really like to drive the conversation to somewhere purposeful so that when at the end of the day, like I'm reflecting on something really important and then also and learning something of a deeper, more higher value about their own journey or what, you know, how they got from here to there. What's your story? How are you thinking about this particular thing? Why does that matter to you? You know, like in my TEDx talk, I talk about, like, I'll ask people about their tattoos. Like, why is that important to you? Why are the decisions, how did you build your life? Like, why are these decisions important to you? So I think it's really important to have conversations, but also what are we talking about? And people mirror the conversation that you bring to the table. So if the conversation is about nothing, you know, like, sure, they built a Seinfeld, you know, series on that, but I think it's like not a high value exchange.
Your TEDx speech, I should say, is titled Why You Should Talk Regularly to Strangers. This has been translated into 15 languages. 15 languages. It just went viral. And you are such an advocate for the transformative power of connection at work. Through this TEDx talk now, you have spoken at Amazon, Microsoft, NYU, you, and many other companies. This almost propelled you into being, I would say, an educational and extraordinarily motivational speaker. Did you think you'd have that path? Was that a goal? Or did you just do this TEDx speech because, hey, the world needed to hear this? Like, what prompted all this?
That's a good question. So years ago, I used to have a food blog, and I would interview people. And I was talking with a friend of mine who's a writer, and I asked her, I said, hey, listen, if I stop writing this blog, will people stop talking to me? And she said, probably. And so I put that to the test, and I was commuting to work by bus. It was about an hour commute one way. And I just started talking to people on the bus or talking to people as we were waiting and trying to drive the conversation to who we are all going on this journey together. Who is here with me? And it would be fascinating because I would meet like the head of the Audubon Society or a screenwriter and what would happen is I wanted to remember these conversations. So I would just write them up and I would throw them on Facebook and people went crazy over them. Like people would read them and then they would hear so much about these conversations that their spouse would want to be friends with me on Facebook so that they could talk about it together. And what happened was I got asked to do a TEDx talk based on these things that I was writing about. And in particular, it was from Seattle. And Seattle is very famous for something called the Seattle Freeze. And it's where you know, people are friendly, but they don't welcome you into their life. And I'm from the Midwest, and I was like, I want to run counter to that popular way of being in this town. Like, I don't want to become that person. And so I started throwing events and, you know, all this kind of stuff in order to bring people together in a more meaningful way. But what happened was, so I started writing the series and I got asked to do a TEDx talk. It wasn't really a plan of mine at the time. And I think I tell that to people who aspire to do a TEDx talk is put your work out there. People will notice. And then, you know, that, and that's what they want, is they're looking for somebody who lives the experience of what they're talking about. So, yeah, I think it's really important.
How much preparation did you have from when you were asked to when you got on that stage? Because you are so comfortable on the stage, Tresa, and it's because you live what you were talking. You were so, do you have to memorize all this?
Well, so I wrote it for one thing, but I will tell you, I think it's really helpful for folks to know is that, you know, it's a nerve-wracking experience. And for me, I was in the habit of playing small and helping put other people, make other people famous. I did public relations and worked with a bunch of big name, household name folks before this happened. And so I was the one behind stage, like coaching somebody else and how to be great. And then when the opportunity came for me to stand in front of, this talk is in front of 3,000 people, that was not something I ever aspired to. I was just like rising to the challenge. And it was a serious, serious mental hurdle that took me down a path of like unpacking what's going on with me and how, why am I resisting this? And it was really difficult, and to the point where at one point in the preparation, we have about 6 months to prepare, and the lady running the TEDx, she said, listen, if you don't get your speech to me in the next 48 hours, I'm going to take you off the agenda. They'd already done the press release and everything. And so I called, I was like, listen, I'm doing something I've never, ever done before. I'm not really getting the support that I thought I was going to get. And so how do I rise to this challenge? So I wrote, I asked a friend of mine who wrote speeches for her boss at Call in America. Hey, listen, can you help me? And she's like, sure, meet me at this coffee shop and we'll work through this. And so we spent 2 days working through it. We came up with something. I turned it in. And then the woman was like, okay, this is better. And then the next day she sent me another email. She's like, you don't think you're done yet, do you? Like, and so it was an agonizing experience, but I had to ask for help in a way that I had never, ever, ever asked for help before. And also that's where I also learned about like the mental journey of trying to step into your greatness, right? There was a lot of resistance, a lot of fight, flight, freeze that was happening. And it wasn't intentional. I actually wanted this experience, but I was really kind of shooting myself in the foot. And so what ended up happening is I had never successfully given my talk from beginning to end until I stepped on stage. And as they're introducing me, I just made a promise to myself. My therapist was in the audience because we were seeing each other twice a week leading up to this. And as they were introducing me, I put my hand on the velvet drape and I said, no matter how badly this goes, I promise I will not kill myself. I promise I will live through this experience. And then I'm standing on stage and there's this moment where like people start laughing and you're practicing and practicing these talks over and over again alone. And I'm like, why are they laughing? What did I say? Oh my gosh. And I was like, do I approve of this laughter? and I was like, oh yeah, I guess that is kind of funny. Okay. And then that's when I just started to relax and kind of ease on into it. But it's a huge, huge journey. And so I think that what I would really like to convey is just, you know, being a leader and swinging for the fences it's an inside job, and it's really, really, it can be really hard. But then when you get through the other side of it, it can be really beautiful and open doors you never even imagined. So be willing to do the hard thing and ask for help. Ask for help. That's so important.
In our short time that we have left, I want to make sure people refer to your LinkedIn post if they'd love advice on the high cost of playing small. Can you tell us quickly, just what is the high cost of playing small in life? You played small for a long time. Getting on a TEDx stage is playing pretty big, I'd say.
Yeah, well, and so the high cost of playing small is like, did you ask for a raise? Did you go for that promotion? Did you go for the job? And what is the cost, the long-term cost of that over time? Like, one, there's a reckoning with yourself. Like, I didn't, that movie of your life, those opportunities, they present themselves. But if you take yourself off the table, what is the net cost of that, right? Are you going to be happy with your movie? And so, again, reckoning with yourself in order to be able to seize the opportunity. But then also the high cost of playing small, like, you know, by going shopping for therapy and racking up a bunch of debt, that impacts your ability to live well in the future. You know, these things, you know, in a storage unit somewhere that you never visited, you know, it's a huge factor, and it impacts the future you. So thinking about how you manage yourself and the opportunities that come your way, and what are you doing to yourself, the self-inflicted decisions that we make.
Chasa, I could talk with you all day. Does everyone say this to you? Don't even answer. Yes, they do. Okay. So for those of you who want to learn more about Chasa Savadogo, perhaps bring her into your company to speak, to be a change agent. You're a very gentle change agent. You meet people where they are. I've seen you in action. But what I loved most about your TEDx talk was your crinkly eyes as you smiled. That wonderful, like, contagious laugh. You're laughing, then I start to laugh. It's so authentic. You're just such an absolutely beautiful person inside and out. And I'm so blessed that I got to meet you. Now I'm getting all teared up. Don't do this to me. I'll just say, Chasa, God bless you. Keep being you. Keep bringing the world your bright light. Any final words for our listeners? Because now we're on podcast. We got bounced off the radio. We went over.
Sorry about that.
No worries. So
last minute words for our advice for our listeners. Advice you'd give your younger self.
Be courageous and ask the tough questions. You know, ask the tough questions of yourself, ask for support. People want to help you. They just don't know what you're going through.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Chasa Savadogo, TEDx speech, why you should talk regularly with strangers. And if you are not following her link on LinkedIn, it is TRACA, then SAVADOGO. Start following her today. It's going to make you a better person. Thank you, Bruce, for another great show.
Thank you, Gail Olofsson. And what do we always say?
Your Sunday is now. What are you waiting for? Let's go. It's go time.